From the City of Angels, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
With that kind of computer speed and knowledge, you can imagine what video games would look like in the future, huh? You probably wouldn't even need those pods and things to hold. You would just merely think your way through the video game. I bet that's very possible. We'll be back in a moment with our guest Hugo Degarius right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hugo Degarius, our guest, Isaac Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics. A robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come harm. A robot must obey orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Third, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. What happens, Hugo, with the three laws of robotics? Out the window when the intelligence gets so big, so high?
Yeah, you got it. You hit the nail on the head. Personally, I'm rather cynical of Asimov's laws. I can imagine they would work for, let's say, low-grade moron artilects.
Right? Moron robots, huh?
Yeah, if they were stupid enough to be programmable, so that human-level intelligence could dictate to them the way to behave, then, you know, his ideas make sense. But, you know, I'm talking creatures hugely above us. They would be easily, I'm assuming, capable of looking at their own circuitry, their own programming that human beings, you know, these moron biological creatures had put into them, and examining them and saying, I don't want that. And just change it.
And just be done with it. That's right.
And, you know, they would just, I don't want to be inhibited by what some inferior creature is put onto me. So they would have the capacity and the intelligence just to switch it around.
Well, let me ask you a bizarre question. Would they actually attack us? Would they kill us?
Well, you see, I mean, I guess the short answer is I don't know. And that's the problem. So imagine, I don't know, between, say, 50 and 100 years into the future, when these machines are getting smarter and smarter by the month, and people are getting alarmed, their household robots are getting smarter every year, and everyone in, let's say, in the rich countries, and I suppose by then virtually everyone will be rich.
I mean, the robot might say, I'm not going to clean the house. You clean the house.
Whatever, right. But the trend will be obvious, right? As people see the gap between human-level intelligence and artificial intelligence, as that gap narrows and narrows, then millions, billions of people will be asking questions like, well, you know, are we going to let the gap close? You know, are we going to let the machines become as smart as we are? Is that a good thing? Can we stop it? Is it possible these machines might become smarter than us? And if so, is that a good thing? And can we stop it? Should we stop it? Or is it a wonderful thing? Or could these machines become hugely superior to us? And then as human beings, we'd no longer be the dominant species on this planet. You know, all these issues would then arise. And so I imagine a great debate raging in time and people will start taking sides. Sooner or later, as the machines get smarter and smarter, they will, I don't know, these things are very hard to predict, but I can imagine a series of negative events where things go wrong. You know, Murphy's Law starts working in a bad way with machines that are increasingly intelligent and with all kinds of unexpected side effects and whatever, which would then galvanize the human population even more and split them badly into earlier in the show you were asking me a little bit about, you know, what's this about the cosmists and the Terrans. So would you like?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I want to come back to that.
Okay. So the first major phase I see in the development of this you know, massive artificial intelligence on the human scale is a debate. you know, as people like myself and others start raising the alarm, saying, "Hey, people, you better pay attention to this question because it's going to dominate our global politics this century. This century, very probably, is the last century in which human beings are the number one species." And ask people, you know, almost twist their arm, saying, "This is not a piece of science fiction. This is a very probable future science. So take it seriously and think it through, you know, and get the social science guys thinking on it, and the political scientists, and the politicians, and the philosophers, and all that kind of thing." So the first phase I see as a debate, and then people will start taking sides. And I see, like I said a little before, humanity will probably split into at least two major groups, and a third, which I'll mention a little later. But to keep it simple, deal with the first two.
Okay.
One group in favor, basically in favor of building these things, I label them the cosmists, based on the word cosmos, you know, the universe. The other group opposed, saying it's too dangerous. Human species, we'd be taking too much risk if we build these things, because we could never be sure what their attitudes to us as a human species mm-hmm. would be in the future, because they'd be so superior to us, their ethics might be totally alien to us. They, for whatever reason, may decide that human beings are kind of cancer, a pest, maybe a competitor for raw materials, or you know, whatever reason. And they may feel so superior to us and just decide to wipe us out. Now, that may not happen. We don't know. But the point is the risk, you know, the uncertainty. You just don't know. So I can imagine a future Terran. Now a Terran, T-E-R-R-A-N, that's the label I give to a person who, by definition, is opposed to building these godlike creatures.
And if this is all correct, at what point then in this evolution would this occur? 10 years from now? 20 years from now? Where the debate begins.
Right. Well, the debate is starting already. And personally, one of my life goals is to try to get this debate off the ground. You know, it's why I've written the book. It's why I get in the media all the time. Well,
have you taken a stand yet?
Now you're hitting the nail.
I mean, because you are an artificial brain builder.
Right.
So one would assume you are. You're a cosmist.
For 10 years, literally for 10 years or so, I sat on the fence. I felt, and still do in many ways, feel terribly ambivalent about this. I haven't got into it yet, but there are a whole bunch of arguments in favor, you know, supporting the cosmist view. And there are a whole bunch of other, also equally very powerful arguments in favor of supporting the Terran, you know, the people who are opposed to the idea.
And I guess what you mean, too, by being opposed is we would level off artificial intelligence at a certain point.
Yes.
And we wouldn't go any further.
Agreed.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That would be the aim. I mean, I see AI, artificial intelligence, as being extremely useful. I mean, imagine a machines that were sufficiently intelligent to be incredibly useful, like, you know, household cleaning robots, sex robots, babysitting robots, teacher robots.
I see the day in medicine, and it's probably not too far away, Hugo, where a nano artificial intelligent machine will go in there and clean out your arteries in your heart, and I mean, you'd have the body of a 20-year-old, you know, and they'd come back out again, and you know, they did their job. I mean, I see that happening, don't you?
Oh, sure. But that kind of thing for me is sort of the short to middle term. I'm trying to think, you know, beyond what, you know, given what's from the physicist in me, what the physics says is potentially possible, and then try to draw the political, you know, the social consequences of that longer term. So, you know, things you're saying, definitely, and they are really good things.
I mean, yes.
I guess. If, you know, if we create immortality, which I see coming in, 10 to 20 years, given the fabulous discoveries that have been made already, individual mortal cells have been made immortal, and now the techno guys doing this kind of stuff are trying to figure out how could you do that for all the cells in a body, right? How can you make the whole body immortal by immortalizing every cell in the body?
Well, why couldn't they do it though when I was 35? Unfortunately, they're going to do it when I'm probably 75.
Right. I guess we're 50, what are you, 50s? You're in your 50s?
Yeah, I'm 54.
Yeah, okay, well, we're pretty well similar.
How old are you?
I'll be 58 this year. I'm 57.
No, you're older.
So we're both boomers, right?
Yeah.
So we're feeling our age.
Yes, we are sometimes.
So anyway, So in the, you asked me the time frame. This is hard to judge.
Well, you said the debate is underway.
The debate is underway.
You're on the fence.
Right.
You were on the fence.
I were on the fence. Yeah, I was on the fence. And my friends would complain, say, Hugo, you're being a hypocrite. You're expecting humanity to choose. I mean, it's a binary decision, right? We build them or we don't build them.
Right.
So, you know, it's one way or the other. Humanity sooner or later will be forced to choose because the march of technology with such tremendous momentum will be there forcing the issue this century.
All right. Well, let me ask you this then. At what point are we where we have to really be concerned about that? You know, where do we take artificial intelligence to the end before it becomes the problem? How many years out? You know,
the pattern would be clear in 10 to 20. I see the main bottleneck in producing true artificial intelligence is the human knowledge of the brain. I see that being the most difficult stumbling block.
Right.
Today, frankly, I've got a whole room. I call it the brain room because it's just full of books on the brain. You know, neuroanatomy, neurophysiology, neural networks, brain theory to the extent that exists, and so on and so on. And you know, reading all those books, I get frustrated because they don't really tell me what intelligence is. That you don't have a really global idea of what the brain is doing. You know, what is a thought? How is a decision made? What's memory? What's consciousness?
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff.
What's intuitiveness? All
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, it's still largely a mystery, which is very frustrating. And so the brain builders like myself, being honest, we're working in the dark. We don't really know what to do. So we just pursue our engineering type ideas. And sometimes they work a little, but most of the time they don't work too well. So we are hungry for ideas, for principles, for guidelines, for signposts that we hope will come out of the neurosciences. So I'm predicting neuroscience will need powerful new tools that don't exist yet before the mysteries of how the brain functions are solved.
But they will probably find it.
And I think the key word is nanotech. I think with these molecular scale machines, you could put a zillion of them into your bloodstream and they flow all over your brain.
I mean, this is what I think will happen, and you're the expert here in the technology part of it, but let's say I want to learn a foreign language. You'll have some kind of chip in your brain. You go and you download the foreign language from a computer. It takes 20 seconds. I think you'll be able to start speaking that language immediately. I think that's going to happen.
Sure. It's just, ultimately, it's just circuitry, right?
All it is.
If you can download the circuitry and integrate it appropriately, and of course that's a major challenge. We haven't a clue how to do that yet. But since it's ultimately just circuitry, if it's known how to do it, then we could do it.
I hate to be the guy that they experiment on the first few times and it doesn't work, huh? Oh, my God.
Right. The first guy to eat an oyster was a very courageous gentleman. Yeah, that kind of thing's coming. So once nanotech gives neuroscience the tools to figure out how the brain works, then I think this whole scenario will move ahead, accelerate rapidly. And so we'll probably have full-blown nanotech and molecular-scale engineering within, 15, 20 years.
Very close now, then.
Within our lifetimes. Even ours, the old guys, right? But the students that I teach, I tell them, look, you guys won't even be middle-aged before this brain revolution will be with us.
Yet in the meantime, we'll still get this doubling, right? This doubling effect?
Yeah. That'll go on for at least another 15 years. And then you come to a screaming halt, maybe, and it's debatable,
mm-hmm.
because, once you get down to the size of the atom...
There's going to be a wall there.
Yeah, what's next?
Yeah.
The nucleus?
Yeah.
The nucleus, if you make an analogy, the size of a nucleus compared to an atom is, there's a famous phrase about this, is equivalent to the size of a fly in a cathedral. So the size of the nucleus is huge.
Yeah.
It's like 100,000 times smaller than the atom. And so to manipulate at that scale, you'd need energies so huge, it's probably not going to be practical for quite a while. And you would then have to move from nanotech to femtotech. That's a million times smaller than nanotech. And humanity, technology hasn't even started thinking about that. about femtotech. So there'll be a sort of, like you say, a sort of brick wall that will hit around 2020, because of the atom. How do you get smaller than an atom?
Mm-hmm. Well, had you said 2012, then my ears would have really perked up. That's the Mayan calendar ending, and yeah. We've all thought of something very strange happening around that period of time.
Okay. Well, and this is what the nano guys are saying, around 2020 or so, ballpark. Then we'll have full-blown nanotech. The neuroscience guys will use these tools to figure out how the brain works. So the next decade, you'll see an absolute revolution in the 2020s, during that decade or so, of how the brain works. Immediately, new principles are discovered by the neuroscience guys. They'll be picked up by the neuroengineering guys and put into artificial brains, speed it up a million times, and so on and so forth. And then, I believe, the next stage, you'll see massive industries, the future Microsofts and Intel.
Oh, huge.
Huge, huge. I mean, our big ticket items today, what do we spend our money on in the rich countries? A house, cars,
yeah.
Insurance.
Appliances, maybe.
Yeah.
TVs.
Right. So, in the 2020s, when these robots start getting really smart because they'll be based on brain, biological brain-based principles, and they'll be imitating how the brain functions more and more closely, and hence getting smarter and smarter, and for all we know, conscious even, perhaps, artificial consciousness. I see that coming.
How about the ability to look into the future artificially? Who knows?
Possible?
Who knows?
If it's physically, but you can generally say if there's no law of physics, if there's no principle in physics that makes something impossible, then it usually will happen.
Then it's possible.
Yeah. Sort of double negative kind of thing.
Well, I do hope you're going to tip us off to these new companies. I kind of missed the Microsoft jump.
Yeah, they don't really exist yet. Anyway, so imagine huge companies producing these artificial brains that are extremely useful. They clean the house and all those things I was mentioning before. You can have sex with them. They'll babysit your kids and whatever. A huge market, huge industry. Trillions of dollars a year worldwide. And that itself will create a problem, because the momentum, the economic momentum that would be built up would be so large, it would be very, very difficult to stop. And that's just one momentum argument. The other one is military. So if you consider the time frame we're talking about, say, 2020s?
2020, yeah.
If you look at the state of the world, the political state of the world about that time, just my own personal opinion, I anticipate a major political rivalry between the United States and, who would you say?
I would have to say China.
Right, yeah. Correct. Now, I am a summer professor in China. I go there for 3 months over the summer, and I just see firsthand what China is doing. They're 1.3 billion people. They have the world's largest average economic growth rate for about, 10%. It's been like that for a decade or more. The whole country, pretty well, is affected with a kind of virus, meaning money.
Mm-hmm.
Beat America.
They're
Get China back to its old status of being the dominant.
A strange communist country with a capitalistic mind.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Still, right. They're holding, the powers that be are holding on to power desperately. A lot of people think, that may change 10, 20 years. But if it doesn't, then you're going to have another kind of inertia, resistance to stopping the rise of massive artificial intelligence. And that is, if you're, say, like the Minister of if you're the DOD of China, the Department of Defense,
right.
You do not have the luxury of allowing the other guy, in other words America, right, to get ahead of you in terms of the intelligence, the artificial intelligence level of your soldier robots or defense systems or whatever.
You can't let them do that.
Yeah, you just can't. It's too risky. You're talking the survival of your country. So I see both an economic and a military or political inertia to stopping it, to slowing it down. And so that gap between the human intelligence level and the artificial, machine intelligence level, as that gap closes and closes and closes, then everyone's going to be asking these questions. You know, where's all this going? Are we going to stop it? Are we going to, like you suggested before, are we going to have a threshold cutoff level? You know, we'll allow the machines to become so smart, you know, to a particular level where they're very useful, but not so smart that they become threats.
But you're always going to get that one person, Hugo, who wants to go beyond that.
Sure, and those people I call the cosmists.
Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast. I'll go to Fast Blast questions as well. Still lots more to talk about. I want to find out who the third group is he's talking about.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, it's not quite artificial intelligence, but it's pretty darn close. The Filament Book Club and getting one of those free electronic books. All you have to do is call 1-888-95-E-BOOK to get the free electronic book. When you become a member of the Filament Book Club, that's F-I-L-A-M-E-N-T, bookclub.com. Simple as that. This is an electronic book. You can download books straight through your computer or right off the telephone. All kinds of books, including, of course, the Air Force fighter pilots talking about 9/11, some things that have to do with the UFOs, some notes from the late Colonel Philip Corso. A lot of great stuff. 1-888-95-E-BOOK and Filament, F-I-L-A-M-E-N-T, bookclub.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Hugo de Garis, our guest. Hugo, what about the possibilities as we evolve that all of a sudden this intelligence gets taken over by a special interest group or, you know, these globalists who would like a one-world government? And maybe they want the population to be reduced. Maybe they want these wars to occur. Is that a danger? Is that a real possibility?
Well, I'm hoping there will be. Yeah, my own view is I'm hoping there will be a global government. I guess I'm a globalist. And
well,
hence,
you
know, no more wars and that's, that kind of thing. And so that would be a risk, but I assume this global government would be, you know, strongly democratic, right? Hopefully.
I don't know. I wouldn't take a chance on that.
Yeah. Okay, well, so we'll assume it's sufficiently democratic that there's freedom of speech and people confront this issue, the species dominance issue, and I just see them splitting into, well, towards the end, you're suggesting, what's this third group? You're asking the question, what would this third group be? So at least it'll split at least two ways, those in favor of building them, those opposed, and a third group, and this is new, we haven't talked about this before, there's a third group called, let's call them the Cyborgians,
or
the Cyborgists. And their attitude, their philosophy is that this whole potential confrontation, this bitter dispute between the group in favor and the group opposed to building these artefacts, you know, the cosmists versus the Terrans, their attitude is that this conflict could be avoided by simply having human beings themselves become artefacts, step by step, by initially becoming cyborgs. And hence their label.
And you know, some people are mini cyborgs now. I mean, those people with pacemakers, for example, and things like that, aren't they? You know, artificial hips.
Agreed. And yeah, you can go back several centuries. I mean, I don't know, a soldier in a war gets you know, with a cannonball, gets his leg shot off, and then he wears a, you know, peg leg Pete,
that kind of thing.
I mean, you know, they're cyborgs in a sense. And in the future, I wouldn't be at all surprised if many Terrans themselves are actually cyborgs. They'll be seduced by the possibility of, you know, the nanotech cleaning out their arteries and manipulating their cells so they become immortal. They could be, in a sense, bought off to a large extent. And that's the argument, for example, that Ray Kurzweil would use, and also Kevin Warwick, or Warwick as it's pronounced. They tend to be in this third group. Their attitudes, they're more, well, if I understand them correctly, they tend to be cyborgists or cyborgians. But personally, I find that approach somewhat naive. If, hypothetically, you could have all of humanity lockstep progressing towards becoming artefacts themselves by you know, everyone adding components to their heads or whatever at the same rate, then maybe that then this bitter conflict between the cosmos and the Terrans could be avoided. But that's just not realistic. It's just not going to happen that way. I mean, there will very probably be millions, if not billions, of cyborgs. You know, people adding all this fabulous technology to their brains and so forth. But that in my view at least, doesn't really get around the fundamental issue. Is humanity, or even modified humanity, going to allow these godlike creatures to exist,
I think they will. I think that humanity just can't stop. And I think if they can take it as far as they'll go with it, they will.
Right. And you know, good God.
What was that?
I don't know. Something in my house just fell. It doesn't matter.
Some cyborg just broke in.
It's probably a clock or something. The glass broke. Anyway. The argument you've just given, that is one of the cosmist arguments. The human striving argument, if you like.
And if we don't do it, China might, or India might, or Pakistan might.
Right. And even if there's a global government, and the global government decides not to do it, you're not going to stop the cosmos.
They
may even go underground.
Right.
For them, it'd be a kind of religion, right? Think about it. From a cosmos viewpoint, our pathetic little lives, right? What are we as human beings? We're programmed to die.
I would call us pathetic.
Well, you know, we live, what, 80 years?
Yeah.
In a universe that's billions of years old?
Yeah, but I wouldn't call it pathetic. I kind of enjoy it.
Well, shoot. Okay, but you know, from the prospect of what could be, and we live in a universe where there are trillion stars, right?
Yeah.
You can see the religious element coming in, you know, the sense of awe and all that stuff. So I sense this would be a very, very powerful argument in favor of cosmism. The people wanting to build these godlike creatures that would be immortal.
Yes.
They could go anywhere. They could do anything. They could change their form in, you know, a nanosecond or whatever. You have virtually unlimited memory capacities, intelligence levels, trillions of trillions of times above us, and the physics allows all this.
What would they look like, Hugo?
Well, they could be almost any form they like. I mean, they could change. They'd be changelings. They could change their shape, their structure, their architecture, doing whatever they want. I mean, you could have, for example, these artific creatures, which could perform experiments on themselves. Like a part of them could, for example, perform like evolutionary type experiments on architectures, and have another part of them measure the results. You know, so they're just making random changes to a small part of themselves and observing the outcome. And if they consider that outcome favorable, they could then incorporate that that new architecture, that newly, freshly evolved architectures into themselves. And this process could be going on all the time, you know, at electronic speeds. You know. So these things, they could take on any shape they want. If they wanted to, I don't know, rocket themselves from one planet to another, you know, so their shape would not, in a sense, be a property that they would have, right? It would just be, it'd be like water. I mean, what shape is water? It could be whatever they want.
See, I keep thinking that they're made with materials.
Yeah, ultimately, yeah, atoms, I suppose. Yeah.
So, okay, I see what you mean. So, again, I have to stop thinking of it in a conventional sense, where you look at a robot today like Osimo, the one that Honda has made.
Right.
You know, he looks like a robot. These aren't going to look like robots, are they?
Well, probably initially they would, because, you know, the industries would depend on them, and human beings would demand that they be sort of warm and fuzzy and familiar and, you know, humanoid. That's the Japanese philosophy with the industries they're creating right now.
Listen to this thing. They made them in God's own image.
Yeah, right, right.
It's like recreating the Bible all over again.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of the cosmos arguments. You know, you're building gods. So in a sense, we'd be God builders. And what a magnificent destiny for the human species. That's the cosmos viewpoint. But if you're a Terran, then you'd be terrified that a risk would be run if the cosmos go ahead and build these things, that these things in a highly advanced state might, for whatever reason, decide to wipe us out. And
well, let me tell you something. If we have shortages of food and things, they wouldn't care, would they? They wouldn't eat.
Well, I mean, yeah, ultimately, they still have to obey the laws of physics, right? So they have to get energy from somewhere. So whether they get it from the sun, or they have their own nuclear reactor inside themselves or whatever, they still have to obey certain constraints.
Or maybe they found a new form of energy. Maybe it's zero-point energy. Maybe they
possibly. And because of their huge intelligence, they may discover phenomena that we, you know, as human beings, we don't even know exist.
Yes.
So, you know, like trying to imagine, like I've got a chapter in the book, The Arctic War. I've got a chapter, the most speculative one, trying, with our feeble human brains, trying to speculate on what would the existence of an Arctic be like? What would they do? You know, and one possibility is, and this is, you know, quite speculative. Human beings have already figured out, well, in theory at least, how to build baby universes. There's a guy at MIT, his name's Guth, or Guth, G-U-T-H, and he already has theories on how to do this. So one speculation I had in that chapter was, maybe these Arteleks, you know, with all their brilliance and power, maybe they could design universes and just, you know, build them. Now, there's evidence, have you heard of the Anthropic principle? Does that come up in your shows?
Anthropic, no.
Okay, all right.
You know what, maybe the specific name hasn't, but maybe the concept has.
The concept, okay. Well, I'll just briefly, I'll mention what it is. There's evidence that may be a bit too strong. There are strong hints, let's say, within science, within particularly physics and astronomy, that says that the values of the constants in the laws of physics are so fantastically, improbably, finely tuned to allow the existence of matter and life, that a growing number of scientists are starting to say, hey, the universe is rigged. It's been designed. Because if you change the values of those constants in the laws of physics just by a tiny, 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 tiny amount, in certain cases, then there would be no life. There'd be no stars.
Right.
Now, that's the Anthropic principle. So there are strong hints that the universe, coming from science itself, this is not religion, right? This is coming out of science, saying that it looks as though the universe is rigged. It's been engineered. It's been set up to create life, with the implication, of course, of some, you know, glorified designer. Now if, you know, I don't deny this is highly speculative, but nevertheless, these Arteleks in their godlike form perhaps might decide to play with universe building. And for all we know, maybe our universe is just that, right?
It could be.
A toy.
They become gods themselves.
Yeah. So the cosmos will have this almost scientifically based religion inverted commas, right, that building these things would be effectively building gods. In fact, I had a kind of slogan where I try to summarize the essence of the debate, the two major sides, and it's rather pithy, and here it is. Do we, and by we I mean the human species, do we build gods? So, that would be the cosmos viewpoint. Mm-hmm. Do we build gods, or do we build our potential exterminators? And that's the Terran viewpoint. Now, given there's so much at stake here, that the debate will rage in time, passions will rise, as people become more and more aware that this is not a piece of science fiction, this is, my view, future reality.
How would you like to see a very unscientific poll on that very question?
Now, actually,
I can do that instantly.
That would be wonderful. Mm-hmm.
I can do that. I'll let you frame the question.
All right.
And then keep in mind, we've got,
you got
5 million people
lines?
Listening.
Okay.
Through Fast Blast, I'm going to get a certain amount of votes in. So it's got to be, let's make it easy because I have to look at it and poll it myself.
Okay. That would be fascinating.
If they want to vote for the cosmists or the
Terrans. Exactly.
But now, you frame the question.
All right. Just half a minute before I do.
Okay.
Should I see? The same thing has occurred to me, and I give lots of speeches and stuff, and so typically at the end of one of these talks, I will invite my audience to vote. I guess here's your question: would you individually, as an individual, do you feel yourself more cosmist? Do you feel that humanity should build these godlike creatures that are so potentially dangerous? Or do you feel that it would be a terrible mistake, the risk is too great, and that you should not do it, and that would make you more a Terran? So
Right. Are
you more cosmist in your attitude, your personal attitude? Are you more Terran? Now, do you want me to give the results, or do you think that might influence?
I'm going to give you the results, because they're going to vote right now for us.
Okay, well, I won't tell you what the...
No, don't tell us what yours were.
Okay, because that might influence the results.
Exactly.
I'd be fascinated to learn.
And then you can just do C or T, everybody. Cosmos, of course, being those that favor pushing this artificial intelligence as far as you can go, and the Terrans don't want to do that. So C or T. Go ahead. We'll open up Fast Blast, and then sometime next hour when we're taking questions, Hugo, we'll have the results and see if it matches up with what you did.
Interesting. And, fascinating.
This is
the first time this has ever been done, as far as I know.
Okay.
There's a bit of history here.
You'll get a kick out of this.
Because
the response. Well, I just think the human mind has to keep going as far as it can go. I think if you shut it off, it dies. And so regardless of what comes out on this poll or whatever we do in reality, I think someone somewhere is going to do it. The same with cloning, for example. I think you can make all kinds of laws about banning cloning. Someone's going to do it. A human being is going to get cloned, and then they're going to keep going from there. That's my take.
Yeah, and part of me has the same. At a deep level, individually, I feel I'm more cosmist. Right? I think it would be a cosmic tragedy if humanity chooses to freeze the current level of evolution at our puny human level. I think that would be a cosmic level tragedy.
And that's a good point. Then again, if we believe that they're going to destroy us, people might stop. But I don't know. I don't know if people would think that could happen.
In my own mind, I'm profoundly schizophrenic and ambivalent on this. Part of me is cosmos. I think this would be a magnificent thing to do.
Hey, take a few moments and just tell me about the book and where people can get it, because I'm sure you're going to get inundated if you haven't already.
That would be nice.
Where do you find it?
Just go. In fact, hit probably the easiest thing to say is just hit my website,
which is linked up with coasttocoastam.com.
Yes, it's on there, and on the front page you'll see of my website you'll see a cover, a picture of the cover of the book. And just below there, it says, I can't remember the exact
words. And it's the Artelect War, right?
Cosmos versus Artelect War.
And that's really all. That's really all people have to worry about.
Yeah.
Is that in your?
Yeah, you
name?
Could get that from Amazon or Barnes and Noble.
Is that
either.
You peeking through this thing, this machine, or whatever it is?
Sorry, what?
Is that a picture of you on the cover?
Yes. Yeah. That's one of my old generation brain building machines.
What is it? What is that?
It's a piece of evolvable hardware. What that means is it at electronic speeds, it evolves, in a Darwinian way. it evolves electronic circuits that behave like neural networks, like neurons in our brain.
Weird. It's huge. It looks like you're standing on a neon sign in Las Vegas.
It was big. It was about a cubic meter in size. It weighed 100 kilograms. It was heavy. But now the next generation machine I'm using, it's the size, it's just a single electronic board. This is Moore's law, right? A consequence of Moore's law. It's the size. It's a single electronic board, and it's about the size of a book, of a paperback book.
And you're still working on artificial intelligence, right?
Oh yeah, that's what I get paid for. I try to build artificial brains.
How do you do that? Technically.
Well, I evolve these circuits at electronic speeds in seconds to minutes, and each circuit has its own little function, like recognize a moving line that moves left or whatever. Usually fairly low level functions, and I can evolve tens of thousands of these circuits. And then download them into an ordinary PC, so it's cheap. And then I connect them up. I connect these circuits up, so the output of one becomes the input of another, and so on. And design artificial brains. So I call myself a BA.
Yeah, you don't have one of these little chips in your head, do you?
Not yet.
I bet you do.
I bet you I don't. I'm quite a
so we're going to come a long way from people who may get chips put in their arm for identification.
Yeah, that's Kevin Warwick's stuff, right?
Yep.
Kind of, yeah.
His eye cyborgs and things like that.
Yeah, like you say, the first guys to do this with their brains would be very courageous.
And okay, well,
I wouldn't be willing to be the first. Maybe the millions.
I'll tell you what, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll be back for one final hour with you, Hugo. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Fast Blast is open. And, of course, we're taking that poll, as he explained. Are you a cosmist? Someone who believes that we should push this as far as we can, this artificial intelligence, or are you a Terran, T-E-R-R-A-N, you can just do T or C, and a Terran, of course, they want us to stop. They don't want us to go far because they're concerned. Fast Blast me, I'll pull it up, and in about a half hour or so, we'll have the results of that, too.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.